Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, I woke up today. The sun rose in the east. You're joining me for the podcast as usual, which means you're alive. Our families are alive. Somehow, the sequester hit, and the American flag is still on the top of the Capitol in the White House. What happened?
Sorry, a plane just fell out of the sky right on top of me. No, if there's any type of real, genuine, serious impact of the sequester, a good place to start would be the about 800,000 civilian Defense Department employees who would be on a furlough, which basically means they'd be working 4 days a week, and they wouldn't get paid for the fifth day a week. And if you're one of those folks, that stinks, and 800,000 is a considerable amount of people. Completely unmentioned in most of the coverage until late last night. Do you realize it doesn't kick in for at least 30 days, Greg?
Right.
At least 30 days. And then, of course, there's like, you know, they have like 30 days to send out the first warnings. So basically, it could be like, you know, more than at least a month and probably like closer to 2 or 3 months before anyone actually stays home from work as a result of the sequester. So right now, the only serious policy change is the couple hundred illegal immigrants who the ICE is pretty sure isn't really a big threat to the public, but they're, you know, they haven't really listed what crimes they were arrested for, et cetera. So we will see as day by day. I'm sure right now the administration is desperately searching for kids who can't go to school or some air traffic controller to say, oh, my goodness, we're going to have planes crashing tomorrow, you know, or something like that. But really, when you get down to it, it's going to be a while before anybody even notices anything different. And I think that is certainly not been the administration messaging heading into this. And we knew this administration was likely to end up biting off more than it could chew or overreaching at some point, and maybe this is it. We'll see. We'll know more in a week, but for now, I don't know about you. I went to the city last night to watch the giant decimal point ball drop right at midnight. It makes Washington look silly. So I'm going to say, oh, it makes both sides look bad. The Democrat argument basically is that we can't make this 2% cut. The facts just aren't there, you know, and for everyone to say that, oh, cutting anything is a catastrophic cut indicates that, you know, nobody believes that every dollar the government spends is wise and can't be eliminated. And so, look, you know, maybe this is going to be a very stressful couple of days for the administration as they realize the doomsday scenario that they painted with their rhetoric is not coming to pass.
And kudos. So, you know, we've complained about Republicans giving in on some of the bigger deals like the debt ceiling and the fiscal cliff in the past dust-ups over this. And we weren't crazy about the sequester idea and how it was allotted. But give credit to the Republicans for not giving in to Obama's latest demand for tax increases. Obama clearly saw that that was not going to happen, which is why he went from the sky is falling approach to, well, this isn't a cliff. This is a tumble down, I think is how he referred to it the other night. But apparently Maxine Waters, Democrat of California and scarily the top Democrat on the House Financial Services Committee, didn't get that memo. They apparently heard testimony from Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke on Thursday. And apparently Maxine Waters wrote down some figures wrong because she claims that Ben Bernanke said that just about everyone in America is going to lose his job.
And he said that if sequestration takes place, that's going to be a great setback. We don't need to be having something like sequestration that's going to cause these job losses, over 170 million jobs that could be lost.
170 million jobs. That sounds a little bit off from every other Friday or whatever it might be coming with some of these furloughs.
Well, it's actually great news, Greg, because I don't know, there's only like 160 million jobs in the country right now, 150 some. So we're actually going to hire like 11 million people. We're finally going to make that huge jump in employment that we've been hoping for years and years. The bad news is that everyone will then get fired, not just the 11 million people who are just immediately hired. All of us, everyone in America, there will no longer be employed Americans. We're just going to be all just sitting on our couches everywhere. You just click on the television and nothing will be on because no one's working on television either. So, to give you a sense of this, the line we just played was quoted by Peggy Noonan in her column that'll probably be in the weekend edition of the Wall Street Journal. And she says, famous idiot Maxine Waters. Now, we all know Peggy Noonan. She's not the harshest, nastiest commentator in the world. So when even Peggy Noonan is calling you a famous idiot, then I think it's a sign that you've really kind of entered the lexicon as someone who's known for saying things that don't make much sense.
Another gem there from Maxine Waters, to say the least. All right, but one of the reasons that the debt is such a problem and will get even worse is because of the president's new health care law, which, of course, he promised would actually be deficit neutral or would add less than $1 trillion over 10 years and that sort of thing. But that's not true. In fact, we get more and more drops in the bucket about how this is going to get worse and worse for the American people. You and I talked, I guess I think it was a couple of weeks ago, Jim, about how the CBO is now saying that 8 million people will lose their employer-based coverage starting in 2014. Now it looks like it's going to get even worse thanks to the Obama law demanding that parents can keep their kids on their insurance plans up to the age of 26. Investors Business Daily editorial says, quote, so at many companies, something has to go. Quite often, the rational response to rising health insurance costs is to drop spouses, more specifically wives, from insurance plans. Sometimes it's the husbands who must go. But benefits experts have confirmed to MarketWatch that those who are kicked out of plans tend to be women. Employers also have a strong incentive to drop spouses because of a per-life fee that Obamacare requires from companies that insure their workers. That fee is now $1 to $2 per life, but it will be substantially more, $65 per life, in 2014. The trend of dumping spouses will only accelerate when the federal health exchanges are open next year, because employers will be able to claim that the spouses can get coverage that way. So, once again, if you like your plan, you can keep it. Not so much.
Yeah, no, a lot, you know, well, your spouse can keep his or her plan. You, on the other hand, are kind of SOL. Two thoughts on that, Greg. First, when Nancy Pelosi said, I believe she said something like, the, you know, like 4 million or 5 million jobs would be instantly created by Obamacare that we, you know, somehow have not had. But apparently it was divorce lawyers, right?
I guess so.
You know, that's the first thing is, you know. And then the second thing is that, boy, you know, if indeed, as the Obama administration does end up pushing at the Supreme Court for recognition of gay marriage, and gay marriage ends up becoming the law of the land from sea to shining sea, boy, are gays going to be pissed when they find out that they're losing their health insurance coverage, even though they're now legally permitted to get married everywhere. So, haha, joke's on you guys. Sorry, guys. You finally are allowed to get married anywhere you want, and it turns out you're, you know, kicked off of your spouse's health insurance. Obama administration giveth, the Obama administration taketh away, I think is a good way of describing the philosophy here. Obamacare, it is the gift that keeps on giving. We do really need to have some sort of, like, variation of the Pelosi thing. We needed to pass the bill so Americans could see just how bad it is and just how many awful, unexpected ramifications they were. Or perhaps I should better say, unexpected to some of us.
Wow. Everything you just said is really depressing. So that's why it's the, that's why it's the bad martini. All right, on to martini number three now. And as we know, North Korea is the most closed society in the world, and Kim Jong-un, I'm not even sure he's 30 years old, he's right around that age, he's now the new leader of the communist state, which starves its citizens, represses anybody even coming close to adhering to any organized religion, but he's made a very important new friend. I don't know if this guy was in running to be Secretary of State and just didn't make the final cut, but Dennis Rodman went to North Korea, took in a basketball game with the North Korean dictator. I'm sure they had a lot of deep conversations about human rights violations and so forth, Jim. And Rodman leaves North Korea saying two things. First of all, he's made a friend for life. And secondly, he had hoped he would see Psy, the guy behind the Gangnam-style video, who's actually from South Korea. So I'm sure he was disappointed there.
You know, Greg, first of all, every once in a while you come up with a crazy martini that just doesn't leave me a lot of places to go. But, there's nothing I can say that will exceed the craziness of this particular crazy martini. Forcing the issue, I guess I could observe, look, we wanted to see this administration get tougher with North Korea. Sending them Dennis Rodman, doesn't that strike you as a little provocative? Isn't that playing with fire? I mean, look, they're a brutal regime that starves their people and terrible work camps and abuses power and, you know, sets off nukes and stuff. But do they really deserve Dennis Rodman? There's probably something in the Geneva Convention or something like that. So, also, another kind of just fascinating and shocking wrinkle of this story, Dennis Rodman's still alive.
Well, Dennis Rodman's virtually unintelligible in English, so I'm trying to figure out how they communicated and what they would actually have to talk about maybe basketball a little bit, you know, well, coloring your hair, cross-dressing. What's on the agenda for this diplomatic mission?
As we all recall from the brilliant Zucker commercial, Madeleine Albright went to North Korea and brought a basketball that was signed by Michael Jordan.
Right.
This was one of our great diplomatic outreaches. This is where she, you know, clinked the champagne glasses with Kim Jong-il, and it was, you know, for a lot, in the eyes of a lot of folks, a rather ham-handed and desperate attempt at outreach at a regime that's just never going to make sense and we're just never going to see eye to eye with. The idea that I guess that's like, hey, remember that guy who signed the basketball? This guy used to play with him. Might be how this diplomatic outreach began or something. But, you know, when you think about it, I mean, Dennis Rodman, Roger Clinton did a concert out there. I mean, North Korea tends to attract kind of the I'm going to say the C list, the D list of the celebrities. So, you know, it's a, when you're carooning in North Korea, you really need to think about changing agents at that point.
So we went from Michael Jordan's autograph to Dennis Rodman in person, which leads to only one conclusion: Scottie Pippen was not available.
Yes, exactly. You know, Pippen is meeting, I think, with the Iranians.
Amazing. As you said, it's pretty hard to add to just the sheer craziness of that whole effort. People want to get in to be able to help millions of people who are starving, and who actually gets in? Dennis Rodman.
You know, kids out there who dream someday of being a prominent, important diplomat hammering out peace deals, work on that jump shot.
Or throw some elbows in the paint while you're rebounding. One of those things. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.